Hello and welcome to the Hornets and Heartbreak podcast. My name is Mark Bernacki and I'm here with my co-host Tim Rogers. What's up, Tim?
What it do, Liquor Mark?
I'm doing pretty well, man. So today we are going to be listing off our top five coaching candidates to replace James Borrego. This isn't necessarily who's most likely to be the next coach of the Hornets, but it's who we want to be the next coach of the Hornets. We can dream a little bit here, Tim. And I've mentioned this on previous episodes. We're going to be taking a deeper dive into some of these candidates. And my number one is Mike D'Antoni. So I think most of the listeners will know about D'Antoni, but just in case you don't, he coached the Suns from 2002 to 2008. Those were the teams with Nash, Stoudemire, Sean Marion. He pioneered an offense that was nicknamed 7 seconds or less for how they pushed the tempo in transition. He was also the coach of the successful Rockets teams with James Harden and then Chris Paul. Also ran an innovative offense there for better or for worse. Those teams just notoriously refused to shoot mid-range twos. And they scored a lot of points. He's two-time coach of the year. And the enticing part here for me is what he's been able to do with great guards. So James Harden and Steve Nash. And what he could presumably do with LaMelo. If you look at where he failed with the Lakers and with the Knicks, or not failed, but, you know, didn't have as much success with those teams, they didn't have great point guards. And so when he has a great point guard like Nash or like James Borrego, he's a great coach. And he's been able to run some high scoring offenses with innovative offensive schemes. And that's what I want to see him do with LaMelo. He's 70 years old. So who knows if he's even interested in a head coaching position again. He's currently with the Pelicans in an advisory role. But if he is interested, I would think that the Hornets would be one of his top destinations because of LaMelo. Despite what Ben said on the last episode, I do think that the Hornets have an enticing job for potential coaches with a young point guard as skilled as LaMelo.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting thing where you can almost turn our small market lack of like heavy coverage into a positive for your head coach. Like if you're a player, that's probably, you know, not as exciting. But like, you know, if you have two bad games in New York, they're like, oh, my God, this guy's got to get fired. In Charlotte, you could have two bad years and people will be like, wow, what does that coach look like? So I think that would be big. Yeah, I would love Mike D'Antoni. And I would say, man, he was responsible. I wouldn't say it's not fair to say he's totally responsible for Lynn's sanity, but that was also under his helm as well. Chris Duhon had a 20 assist game and I don't know if anyone remembers Chris Duhon. That was not the normal. So yeah, I think that he is just capable of squeezing a lot of juice out. And something that would be exciting would the idea of him turning Miles into almost like a Sean Marion mold. Like we're really just thinking high. And we would not, I don't think we would have to worry about seeing as much Plumlee minutes or really any plotting bigs with D'Antoni, even though he did have success with Capella. But yeah, I think the fact that the Suns were so fast and the Rockets actually played like one of the slower paces of the league, but they were just extremely methodical, great shot selection. So yeah, I think that as far as offensive coaches go, he's number one and most exciting. I think if anything, again, the big worry is just he's 70. Does he want to come here and how much will we be willing to pay him?
Yeah. And he's definitely like the most tantalizing of the coaching candidates. Where'd you have him ranked on your rankings, Tim?
I had him second.
Okay, cool. So he's probably the one that like is the least available of the five on my list in terms of what you said with us being willing to pay him. He's presumably going to be looking for a lot of money in any sort of deal where he signs as a coach. And then also just, is he even looking to coach at all? You're going to hear his name come up in rumors, though, with like the Lakers and other teams. So he will be, you know, in the rumor mill. The question is, will he actually take the interviews? And we'll have to wait and see. Who'd you have number one, Tim?
I had my man, Terry Stotts, number one. For those who do not know, his most prominent coaching role was the Dame Lillard Trailblazers for about 7 years. But he was also the lead assistant on the Dallas Mavericks championship team in 2011, which I would say that team is pretty famous for getting every bit of talent out of their players, and especially defensively. You know, building a championship team around Dirk and a 40-year-old Jason Kidd and a washed-up Sean Marion as well. So I think that there's defense potential there. In his time with Portland, he had six top 10 offenses and three top three offenses. And even with a terrible defensive unit, multiple top 10 finishes on that end as well. He's another guy that gets the most out of his point guards and is used to working with very limited bigs, which I just think we'll have in perpetuity. So I think that Terry Stotts has a lot to offer, and I think is a realistic guy as well.
Yes, I definitely think he's way more realistic than D'Antoni. I had him number two, so we just kind of flip-flopped our one and two there. If you listen to the last podcast, Ben Golliver was super high on him for us, and that sort of swayed me, his arguments for Terry Stotts on the Hornets. What he did with Damian Lillard is super impressive. He took Damian Lillard from, you know, maybe a fringe all-star to one of the best point guards in the league. And he had a successful tenure there. Like, when you look at those rosters, the fact that they made the conference finals at some point is super impressive. And I mean, they were never legit championship contenders, but they were close. And the rosters outside of Dame and CJ were never that outstanding. So I'm with you there. I would love to get Terry Stotts as our coach. It's another question of how much are we willing to pay him? You'd imagine he'd be looking for a good bit of money coming off of his Portland tenure. And another question of, is he looking to coach again? I think so, but it's not, you know, you never know with these guys. They could be looking to just settle down. But yeah, Terry Stotts, I had him number two, and I'd be happy if he was our coach. Who'd you have number three?
So this is in the more realistic range as well. And I think should be noted that the Hornets have not hired a head coach with head coaching experience prior since Larry Brown in 2008, I believe. So this is Sean Sweeney. He is the Mavs head assistant, and he has turned a hopeless defensive team into a top six unit this year, even though they don't have, like, their defensive talent isn't that far ahead of the Hornets, I would say. He'd also would be the cheapest of the options we have mentioned thus far. So that's what I'm looking. Not a huge track record for him, but, you know, it's hard to, you know, really pinpoint what assistants are bringing.
Yeah. So I didn't have him on my list, but I kind of wish I had. I mean, obviously what the Mavs have been able to do defensively this year is super impressive. You can attribute some of that to Jason Kidd, but also some to Sean Sweeney. And they don't have that good of a defensive roster. Like, when you look at their players, Jalen Brunson's not an elite defensive player. They have, like, Dorian Finney-Smith. And I can't remember their center's name right now.
Maxi Kleber.
Yep, there we go. Yep. So what they've been able to do defensively, and then what they've been able to do in the postseason as well this year, presumably going to beat the Jazz tonight. So I'd be down for him. I don't have him on my list, but, you know, we could make him sixth on my list. Third on my list was Kenny Atkinson, who I've mentioned before, largely regarded as one of the best player development coaches in the NBA. As a head coach of the Nets, he took that roster from 28 wins to 41 wins and a playoff berth. Those are those teams with D'Angelo Russell, a young Jarrett Allen, Jared Dudley. Not much to work with on those rosters, but they were the seventh seed. And they had a nice little interesting playoff series against the 76ers. That was a fun playoff series. Then the following year, when Kyrie and KD joined the roster, he was fired mid-season, probably just because they didn't really like him. And that's one of the more unjust firings in recent history, where he was doing well as a head coach, but just didn't get along with the star players, probably. He also worked as an assistant under Mike D'Antoni and Mike Budenholzer, D'Antoni with the Knicks and Budenholzer with the Hawks. So he's worked for some premier coaches in the NBA. And he's currently working with the Warriors as an assistant. And you can attribute some of the credit for the development of their players to Kenny Atkinson.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I mean, they hired him specifically for development. He would be good for hashtag Hornets culture. And the Warriors also have a pretty long history of, you know, they have almost like recreation projects or reclamation projects and assistant coaches. For instance, like Mike Brown, Luke Walton, obviously Atkinson as well, Alvin Gentry. They've had a lot of assistant head coaches come and go. They're very willing to let their guys out early on a contract. They get a head coaching gig. So I think that would bode well for us. And by all accounts, everyone except for Kyrie and Kevin Durant liked him. So not really going to hold that against him.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I guess that would be kind of the one worry, is that he didn't get along with star players previously. So how is he going to get along with LaMelo in Charlotte. And then the other thing is, again, with all these coaches, does he want to leave Golden State? Seems like he has a pretty good gig going right now, with them being almost the favorites to make it out of the West. So, yeah, it's a question of whether or not he'd want to leave and go to Charlotte. Another question of how much money are we willing to pay with a former head coach. But I am of the belief that firing James Borrego only makes sense if we go get a coach with head coaching experience. That's what I think. You know, obviously one of these assistants could pan out as well, but I want to see us go get a coach with some playoff experience, with some head coaching experience previously. And that makes up my top three is coaches who have previously coached in the NBA. So who'd you have fourth, Tim?
See, this is a super uninspired decision, but I looked at someone like Alvin Gentry, who he's been around forever, has roots in North Carolina, went to App State. He's had some really good years, you know, with he replaced, or he was, it went Mike D'Antoni, then 1 year of Lindsey Hunter, there was a disaster. Then Gentry came on, took him to the Western Conference Finals, won a championship, is the lead assistant with the Warriors, was there with the Pelicans, and they had, you know, mixed results, I would say, some good, some bad. Some people consider him like an offensive savant, and other people think that he just got lucky with some good players. But I mean, he's been in the NBA consecutively since 1988, I believe. So a true NBA lifer. And yeah, Alvin Gentry. But if it really came down to it, this is kind of the line of demarcation where I was like, yeah, let's go with the young assistant. Let's roll the dice and, you know, hope there's a little higher upside. But I mean, you could do much worse than Alvin Gentry.
Interesting. Yeah. So I would say, yeah, he's a good coach, and he's coached for like many, many teams. Over the course of the years, he's coached, I mean, how many head coaching jobs has he had? He's had a lot. But I wouldn't be as interested in him, I guess, just because of the monotony of that's associated with Alvin Gentry's name, right? Like, it's like wherever he goes, it's going to be all right, but it's not going to be great. And I mean, that might be a little bit unfair, but that's sort of how I view hiring Alvin Gentry. Fourth, I had Sam Cassell, who sort of goes against my theory that we should get somebody with head coaching experience, but he does have a lot of assistant experience, and he helped John Wall get to the next level with the Wizards as an assistant. He's also a former player in the NBA, so I think he's somebody who could relate to the players and could be kind of a player-friendly coach that we're looking for. He's currently with the 76ers, and that coaching staff might get blown up this offseason. We'll have to see how that pans out with Doc Rivers and the 76ers going up against the Raptors this series. If they blow that lead, I think there's going to be a different head coach next year, to say the least. Do you have any thoughts on Sam Cassell?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I've only ever heard good things about Sam Cassell. I think the John Wall point is a great point. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously LaMelo and John Wall are different players, but Sam Cassell also is one of those guys where was just kind of one of the most like underrated, just everywhere he went, the team was good. And like, you know, it's not like, you know, obviously started with the Akeem Rockets. So it's not like he was the guy that was really like the fulcrum of that, but man, he made the Timberwolves good. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously that was, you know, Kevin Garnett mainly, but yeah, he won with the Clippers as well. I mean, like, you know, won with the 08 Celtics. So, I mean, he's definitely a winner and seems to be, you know, you would assume as a former guard, he's kind of gets the title of point guard whisperer just automatically. I always wonder with this, like, how does that interview go with Jordan? Where Jordan's just like, I used to bust this guy's ass all the time.
yeah, so are we talking about hiring him as a head coach, or are we talking about signing him in free agency? Which one are we going for?
I mean, you know, we brought Isaiah Thomas back. He was pretty good. Like, I'm sure Sam Cassell got a little more size. Yeah, at a certain point, guys, you know, you just end up at the right spot. And, like, even if you're the fifth best player on all the teams, you just get labeled a winner. And I think coaches – you know, players want to look at like winning coaches.
All right, let's wrap up this head coaching discussion. Who do you have fifth?
Fifth, I just threw one against the board. Steve Nash, just another guy where it'd be cool in theory to have my favorite point guard of all time coaching my soon to be favorite point guard of all time.
Yeah, that's a cool one. I mean, with the way it's played out with the Nets, I think there's going to be some questions, you know, surrounding whether or not Steve Nash is a good head coach. I think those questions are fair, but yeah, it'd be fun. It definitely would be fun to have Steve Nash as our coach. I had Jay Larinaga fifth. who was Clippers assistant coach, and he's previously interviewed to be the Hornets head coach. So that's basically why I have him fifth, is that I think he will be interviewed again. You know, he was in the discussions for the Borrego role 4 years ago. And so I think he'll be back as a, you know, interviewee this time around.
I have no take on that. Take your word for it.
Okay. How about coaches that we do not want to see hired as the head coach, Tim? We listed about, you know, 8 or 9 there that both of us would like. What about coaches that we don't want?
All right. So number one, I think on everyone's board would be Steve Clifford. No need to run that back again. Mark Jackson, I think, would be a disaster as well. One of the biggest lies that, you know, NBA fans say is that, oh man, he would have won with the Warriors. Nope, that Warriors team would not have won with Mark Jackson. Terrible communicator and not even a good X and O's guy. Jeff Van Gundy gets floated to every single open coaching job because he has the world's greatest agent, I guess. But he hasn't coached for like 15 years. Think he's out of touch. Brian Shaw, that's another guy that will get brought up every now and then. Nope, he was a disaster in Denver. Famously wrapped his post or his pregame reports to players and everyone hated him. Dave Yeager has had a lot of success, but he's also known as kind of the biggest asshole in the league. So if LaMelo did not really enjoy Borrego's style, I think Yeager would be far too abrasive. David Fizdale had some success. Take that for data. But he's a Lakers assistant coach right now and also is known to have the worst rotations in the league. Scott Brooks, just for the fact that he started Kendrick Perkins the entire 2012 finals, unforgivable, never want him hired and will demand a big contract. Doc Rivers is only good at blowing playoff series, want nothing to do with him, assuming he gets fired this year, which looks like where it's trending. Mike Brown, another defense-first head coach that's never really had success outside of getting to coach the 2017 Warriors for a while, where Steve Kerr was hurt and LeBron James, and even that he held back. And the number one guy we do not want is Tom Thibodeau, who will most likely be released this offseason. And I'm sure you will hear things, oh, he could really turn this defense around. I don't care. I do not care. You know, I mean, he's not really had sustained success since, you know, the mid 2010s. And it would be pretty sad to have Miles Bridges already washed up in 3 years.
Yeah, and I mean, the biggest test for that is ask a Knicks fan, would they trade James Borrego for Tom Thibodeau? And they would be like, yes, yes, please, please do that, right? Like, I got a buddy who's a Knicks fan, and he's, like, interested in James Borrego as a potential head coaching candidate, and he hates Tibbs. I mean, I think everybody who's had, like, more than 1 year of the Tom Thibodeau experience does not like him, and they don't like the rotations. He's famous for not playing young guys. So Book Knight and Kai Jones would somehow play less minutes than they did last year. Yeah.
If Tom They'd be Thibodeau like, we need to the cut coach. Them from the G League, man.
Okay, cool. I think you did a good job recapping those coaches we do not want. One more thing on James Borrego that we haven't mentioned yet, Tim. We did the emergency podcast, so this wasn't really relevant like a couple hours after he was fired, but none of the players came out in support of Borrego after he was fired, which to me is a sign that the locker room was just ready for a new voice. And so that factor, you know, was definitely a big factor in the decision to fire James Borrego. On the day he was fired, I was checking Twitter and like a few of the players tweeted, but nothing directly supporting Borrego. PJ tweeted, time will tell. Super mysterious. Trez tweeted, big summer, exclamation point. So that one's actually maybe even support of hiring Borrego. Melo posted like a highlight video. Miles tweeted about his new song, but nothing about James Borrego. And to me, just silence sort of speaks volumes. And it seems like the team was ready to move on.
Yeah. When you're really like, okay, you know, I think that PJ quote is positive. Like when you're having to talk yourself into that. Yeah. Not a great thing. And again, don't actually think this is what happened, but if you can have two rookies that aren't playing any minutes successfully run a coup on your locker room, probably a bad sign.
Yeah. That was a factor. You know, who knows what percentage it takes, but it's some percentage that he just didn't get along with the rookies at all this season. And you know, 4 years it was successful with Borrego. you know, he had a good 10 year, I would say 23 wins, 33 wins, 43 wins. I've said it a million times. But it was time to move on and, you know, we'll see who we hire. So Shamar on Instagram asks, would a first round exit be defined as successful for the new head coach? What are your thoughts on that, Tim?
I think for the fact that we have not won a first round series since I was like mentally cognitive. Yeah, I would say it would be a big success. I mean, you don't want to just have that be the one goal, but I mean, yeah, I would say absolutely just to get our guys, you know, some reps. But yeah, I mean, we haven't won a first round series as the Bobcats / Hornets, like since, you know, we've moved back. So yeah, I would say unequivocally that would be a success.
And I agree with you. I think that the difference is that, you know, if it was James Borrego making a first round exit this season, maybe he still would have been fired, right? Because it's his fourth year and, you know, the team was just sort of ready to move on. But as a first year coach, if you make it to the first round, that's enough to keep your job with the Charlotte Hornets roster. Now, again, that shouldn't be the baseline. Like, I think there's reasonable expectation that we win a first round series next year. But I mean, the average, the baseline is first round exit for us next year. That is, you know, where we should be looking to get, or that's what's expected of us, right? There's a possibility that we do more than that, but first round exit's about where we should be next year, I think.
What is almost turning into the mantra of this podcast since we've been talking about coaching so much? We are looking for process over results at the end of the day. If we make the first round, but that means not playing Book Knight once again and not playing either one of our two first round picks, like, we don't want to just make the playoffs on the back of like a 31-year-old that we signed for like, you know, 2 years. So right. It's like, you know, we still are in the development cycle of this team, even though it's very exciting, but it's like, we are, you know, when's the last time a 21-year-old has really made like big noise in the playoffs, which is what LaMelo will be this upcoming season. It is important, even though it will be his third season, still extremely young. Miles is still very young. So, you know, let's not sell the farm or anything, but yeah, that it would be very exciting. We have an emergency podcast.
And as a tangent to this, like, if we don't make the first round, that could be a fireable offense for the first year head coach, I think.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this team, in terms of just expected growth, we should be making the playoffs next year with a young team. We should be improving. We should have more than 43 wins next year. And if we don't, I could see the first year head coach being canned after next season. It's possible.
Get an Indiana Pacers situation.
Yep. Yep. All right. Carson asks, do you think Mitch Kupchak's job is safe? I think definitely yes. If Mitch wants to remain the GM, there's been reports that potentially he's looking to retire. So I could see him potentially hiring this new head coach and then stepping down as the Hornets GM and us replacing him. But his job is definitely safe. You know, he wouldn't be allowed to make this decision to fire James Borrego if his job wasn't safe, right? That's a very important decision. And we would bring in the new GM before that decision was made. So Mitch's job is definitely safe if he wants to keep it this offseason.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, it's easy to clown on Mitch for the Gordon Hayward contract or the Terry extension. Like, he hasn't been perfect. He's whiffed on, you know, a couple second rounders. But when you also get Devontae Graham in the second round, you nail the LaMelo pick. You know, he's nailed, you know, like the middle, like the late lottery with Miles, PJ, and even getting Cody Martin and Devontae Graham in the second round. Like, that's for a small market team. I think he's done very well. You know, gave up pretty much nothing for Montrez, which was a worthwhile thing. Hasn't signed, you know, other than the Hayward contract, I don't think anything too egregious. So yeah, I mean, I think he's done like a very, not like an A plus, but yeah, it's like, you know, it's a B plus.
Yes. Yeah. With outside of the Gordon Hayward contract, I think he's done an exceptional job, right? That's like the one move that was just like bad. We knew it was bad from the beginning. Not to mention stretching Batum to make that happen. So that move will forever be, you know, questionable, but he's drafted very well and overall has done well as the GM. So his job security is definitely there.
We're making the case like, you know, this head coaching job is desirable. And it's like, that's because of Mitch Kupchak. When like Kupchak and Borrego came in, I would say that we were bottom three as far as desirability. I'm trying to think, like, when the Grizzlies were blowing it up, the Magic were just the Magic as always. So yeah, I mean, we were, you know, just like a wasteland. Let's not forget.
Yep. It's a lot better than it was 4 years ago here in Charlotte. And some of the credit goes to Borrego for sure. Some of the credit goes to Kupchak. And I think more of the credit goes to Kupchak, if I'm being honest. And so, yeah, his job is safe in my opinion. But, you know, don't listen to me. I said the same thing about James Borrego.
Yeah, and, it might be a kiss of death.
Yeah, maybe I should take that back. All right. Luke asks, who do you guys think will be gone by training camp next year? And I made a little short list here. I think Plumlee is probably gone by training camp next year. So we have the option to pick his contract up, or we can release him and save like $5 million or $4 million in money. I think we're probably going to cut him. He'd be making like $8.5 million, I believe, next season, maybe a little bit more than that. And I think we're going to want to save a little bit money on his contract and look for a center elsewhere, especially considering he had one of his like worst years this year over the past few years. So I think we're going to be moving on from Plumlee. That's obviously conjecture. Like, that's not for sure, but I would not be surprised to see him cut by that deadline of June 30th for us to not have to pay his contract. A couple other people, I think Trez probably won't be back. You know, we don't have him under contract. I don't see us re-signing him this offseason. Nick Richards, not a lot of people are like alert to this one, but he has a team option for the next year. And we're going to be looking to save some money in certain ways. I don't think Nick Richards is going to have a roster spot either. That leaves us with like no centers, but we're going to look for a center in free agency. And maybe we'll finally play Kai Jones a little bit. And then Isaiah Thomas, not on a contract. I hope he's back. I hope Isaiah Thomas is back, but I'm not sure he will be. And then Cody Martin in free agency. We're just going to have to see what kind of contracts he's getting. If he's not getting a lot, then we'll sign him to a contract. If he's getting too much, then he's going to walk.
You know what? I was sitting there. I was like, yeah, man, that makes perfect sense. And I remember what happened with Malik Monk last offseason. I was like, oh. Yeah, that minimum, that's just too much. And obviously it was personality issues. And yeah, you're talking money. Also, we brought this up, I believe, 3 episodes ago. Really, it's a question of roster spots. Because now we also, you know, we have 3 rookies that I think have kind of earned minutes in Booknight, Jones, and our boy JT Thor. So right. That's 3 extra roster spots right there. And we have 2 first-round picks and a 2nd-round pick. So that's another hypothetical 3 players that you would hope fit in there. So that's 6 guys right there.
Right.
You know, and obviously you're not going to hit on every one of those picks, and you know, guys need development time, but it is something. Yeah, with a roster of 15 players to have that many young guys on there, you might have to make way. And also maybe the coach, if we do decide, like, you know, if Mike D'Antoni were to come, then I'm sure we'd be like, oh yeah, we don't need Plumlee.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, maybe we would keep Trez, but yeah, we'll see on that.
Yeah, so of those 5 guys, I would say expect 3 or 4 of them to be gone. Of those 5 listed, I don't see us keeping more than 3 or 3 or more of them next season. I think those are the 5 most likely to be gone. You could maybe throw Kelly Oubre's name into that mix, but I think Kelly's going to be back next year. I think we're going to pay his contract.
Yeah, I think at the very least, you know, hope that Kelly starts off hot. And I would trade Kelly for a 2nd-round pick. I don't even care. Obviously, that's a bit extreme, and no one would do that. You know, the contracts wouldn't work out. But yeah, I mean, I just think that's one thing you could kind of bash Kupchak for, is, you know, maybe letting some talent walk. But, you know, turning Devontae Graham into a 1st-round pick, and initially, I mean, the Kemba situation seemed like a disaster for like right. The first year after the fact. But yeah, then it turns out, no, Terry Rozier was good. Like, that's better than we would have just done in free agency anyway.
That's another feather in his cap, by the way. That's a big one, actually, is flipping Kemba for Terry Rozier. I forgot about that, but that's what everybody would have thought was a terrible move at the time. Kupchak saw the future, man. He knew Terry Rozier was going to do this, and that Kemba was going to have a bad couple years here in Boston and then New York. So that's another really good move by Kupchak. I forgot about that one.
Yep, and he's going to, you know, it's coming full circle. We're bringing Kemba back this offseason.
Potentially. We'll have to wait and see. All right. Delusional Hornets fan take of the week here, Tim. that the Hornets would have taken the Celtics to five games and would have had a better chance than the Nets. I've seen this floated around on Hornets Twitter, and we were 1-3 against the Celtics in the regular season. We beat them in January, but that was a different Celtics team. We still had Gordon Hayward at that point. Look, I'm not saying that it's impossible, Tim, that we would have gone five games against the Celtics. Maybe we would have gotten hot one game and we would have made it to five games. But to say that we would have had a better result than the Nets is definitely kind of blasphemous. KD and Kyrie, despite all their flaws, which are being pointed out right now with that terrible series against Boston, that's a good team. They got two very good players. And we were a good team, but we were a young team. I think we would have been swept also. If we had made the eighth seed, we would have been demoralized by the Heat like the Hawks were. Like, these teams that finished above us in the standings, it's like easy to say, oh, if the Hornets were in that spot, it would have gone five. But nah, it probably would have just been the same thing. So that's one, you know, silver lining of us not making the playoffs. We don't have to see our point guard get shut down like Trae Young did, or see Kyrie just fall off a cliff like Kyrie did.
Two episodes ago, Mark, we were talking Raptors, mm-hmm. and you were very dismissive. You said they're a play-in team, mm-hmm. even though they weren't a play-in team. The Nets went out; they were a play-in team, and they showed their true fraudulent colors.
Yeah,
it was great to see. As my Raptors are now storming back and are about to be the cause of James Harden leaving Philadelphia.
Hey, didn't you give up on them last episode? I don't want to hear you take too much credit here, Tim. I'm all about accountability. All right. I said Kyrie was better than Trae Young last episode. I was in the heat of the moment. I was wrong. It was after game one. Kyrie Irving had like a million points. All right. I saw it. I was like, man, he's back. Look at those handles. And I was wrong. All right. I would like to delete that podcast. I have the access. I could delete it if I wanted to, but I'm not going to. Okay. It's all about accountability here. I was wrong about Kyrie. Okay. And yeah, the Raptors are storming back. Let's get into some playoff picks here with Liquor Mark's Gambling Corner. I'm rocking with Philly -125 tonight. I think this is a must win for them in that Embiid gets it done. I think they have to win this game tonight. If they don't win this game tonight, NBA Twitter is going to explode, dude. It's going to be crazy. Game 7. It's going to be back-to-back years of just complete collapses for the 76ers. What do you think tonight, Tim? What do you think is going to happen?
You know, if I was betting my own money, I would bet Philly as well. But I'm not putting any money down. I'm just putting down my own word, and that is Toronto is going to get it done. They're gonna win by 8 points. It's gonna be a little closer, and then it'll be something tragic, like they end up losing Game 7. But just again, everyone's been joking about it since the Harden trade happened. The idea of Rivers and Harden just imploding in the playoffs just seemed too much fun. Have to root for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm rooting for it as well. But with my money, I can't do it. I got to go with Philly -125. Harden like 2-for-13 game tonight. Don't rule it out. And the Raptors winning another one. That's been a crazy series. It's been a good playoffs.
Yeah, I just checked. Even though the game isn't on for another 6.5 hours, Harden already has 4 turnovers.
I like it. All right, Mavs versus Jazz. So I told y'all after Game 2 to take the Mavs to win the series at like +200. Mavs are -115, close to even odds with the Jazz tonight. Definitely picking the Mavs, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's a blowout. This Utah team is ready to go to Cancun. They're ready to pack it up and send them packing. They're ready to go on vacation. If you listen to me after Game 2, you know, then you'd be making a lot of money right now, Tim. And listen to me again tonight, -115. The Mavs going to get it done for sure in Utah. Lock it in.
Yeah, I mean, Rudy Gobert is just looking forward to getting to Charlotte. He wants to get this over with as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's up. Yeah, there's really nothing just worse than watching the Jazz in the playoffs, because you're like, man, do these guys just all hate each other? Like, it's so weird to see a team that good in theory just quit. But, yeah, no, let's bang Dallas.
All right, Suns versus Pelicans. Gonna stay away from this one, Tim. Weird stuff going on in that series with Brandon Ingram becoming the best player in the world. Wait, I meant to say series. And whenever CP3 has a good game, he always follows it up with a bad one in the series. Super excited to watch this game. The Suns are -140, which feels about right. They should definitely be favored, but it's in New Orleans, and home court has seemed to matter a lot this postseason. I wouldn't be surprised if the Suns just like shut down this cute story that is the Pelicans, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it keeps on going. The cute story keeps on churning out another win. So I'm just going to not gamble, maybe take the Suns, but be careful out there, everybody.
Yeah, I would stay away from this one. It would be interesting if they were to lose, and if the Sixers were to also lose, those would have to be two of like the most stressful, embarrassing first round series I can remember since maybe like when the Cavs went 7 versus the Pacers a couple years ago, LeBron's last year. But like, I mean, that would be an insane amount of pressure for a first round series from either one of those teams.
Yeah, just completely unexpected. I think the Sixers would have more pressure considering the Suns are missing Devin Booker, but like the Suns should still win the series. It shouldn't be this close, but Brandon Ingram's just going off and Jose Alvarado. And you know, that team is fun, which I did not see coming. I thought that was going to be like the most boring series out of all of them. It's turned into like my favorite series of the first round.
And your former Blazers love CJ McCollum. I know that that used to be your boy back in the day. Yeah, Brandon Ingram. Let's talk about North Carolina's own for a second. Like, he doesn't look like Kevin Durant, but he kind of looks like 85% of Kevin Durant out there, which is pretty cool when, you know, considering KD is like one of the most unique players of all time. Yeah, Brandon Ingram really getting it done. That's very nice to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say he's definitely been the best player in the series. You know, I joked about him being the best player in the world, but he's definitely been the best player in the series. And when you have the best player in the series, you have a chance. That's kind of how it goes in the NBA. All right, so Grizzlies versus T-Wolves. Even odds for both teams for this game in Minnesota. And I'm a diehard Josh fan. I'm a diehard Grizzlies fan. But I think it makes sense to take Minnesota, considering how close this series has been. And it's in Minnesota. I'm pulling for the Grizzlies, but with even odds for both teams, you got to take Minnesota at home in game 6. When I'm gambling, Tim, I'm gambling with my brain, not my heart. And you got to pick the T-Wolves if it's even, because it's in Minnesota and the series has just been wacky. And it's just been a close series. I can't pick the Grizzlies when they just barely won game 5 at home.
Man, as someone who is not a Timberwolves fan by any means, you know, I always root for the bad team since, you know, we're a bad team. So I have some sympathy for them. What a insane series. There have been so many times where, like, I've been ready to text you talking some shit and then be like, let me wait 10 minutes just in case. Because, like, nothing feels safe, you know, between all the blown leads. Obviously, that jaw game winner was sick. So got to give it up to him. But yeah, this has been a ridiculous series. Certainly one of the most entertaining. And it's also weird, you know, talk about home court. I feel like, you know, the talk over the last like 10 years has kind of been about how home court isn't as important. And then all of a sudden, getting small sample size thus far, it is like, it does make sense to bet on that. And especially in the playoffs. Yeah. Yep. So now I'm with you on the pick. Honestly though, I have to say kind of gone away, and I think Memphis is gonna win, but
they're gonna get it done.
Yeah, but you know, that being said, I mean, I would say that Minnesota, you look back at this and you're like, wow, we totally should have and could have won this series. Like, the series could have already been over if they didn't just totally blow it in multiple games. But yeah, but I think it's just been a very fun series of like two young dumb teams with a lot of good players just making terrible decisions all the time.
Yep. Yeah, that Anthony Edwards coverage of Ja on the game winner, where he tried to steal the ball instead of staying in front of him. Terrible, terrible. Yeah, so another reason why he's worse than LaMelo. LaMelo never, ever, ever just goes for steals. No. Never seen him do that, haunt him.
No, I will. One last thing I resent about the series as it's kind of made me like Patrick Beverley. There have been times where I'm like, whoa, Beverley looks awesome. And then guaranteed a quarter and a half later, I'm just like, dude, this guy is such an idiot. I was like, God, like one of the worst players I've ever seen. So the Pat Bev experience is truly something. I hope he's never on the Hornets.
All right. Shout out to all of our supporters on Winnow. You guys can subscribe to get live texts about the Hornets and about other things. Shout out to all the supporters, Xavier Harvin, TC Cunningham, Brandon Garcia, Austin Johnson, Isaac Black, Dan Joseph, Aaron Barton, and Caitlin Ferland. The link is in the show notes if you want to support.
Yeah, and absolutely. Thank you to everyone that's taking the time to listen. If you could be so kind just to rate, review, and subscribe, really would appreciate it.
All right, Tim, it's been real.
All right, it's been real. Be safe out there. Look at Mark.
Peace. Bye.